This episode has a content warning. It touches on self-harm and suicide. If you are suffering or triggered by the themes of this podcast, please contact Lifeline on 13 11 14. Welcome to the One Question Podcast, brought to you by Wabi Sabi Studios. I'm your host, Michelle Cox, and I love having unlikely conversations on uncomfortable topics. It's a huge passion of mine, so much so that I wrote a few books a while back that challenge people's notion on living a life more unconventionally. This entire podcast stems around one question. If there was one topic you wish society would talk more about, what would it be?
I'd lie in my bed for hours just wanting not to be here anymore. And I guess looking back now, I know that was just a thought pattern and it wasn't the truth. And your mind is this powerful beast that can play wild tricks on you.
Shane Kelton is a speaker and author who's experienced mental health issues since the age of 12. His first memories are hiding under his bed with the thoughts of wanting to die, and it was the internalizing of all the thoughts and feelings that 9 years later led to a suicide attempt. A rollercoaster ride of ups and downs was to follow as he went about finding his way to get through the darkest of thoughts. Shane knew he didn't want to die, but the internal dialogue and suffering all became too much. In the years that followed, Shane got to work on himself, lived the ups and downs, and decided after a friend died by suicide that enough was enough. As a lived experience speaker, he wanted to do more, so he wrote his book, I Didn't Want to Die, I Just Wanted the Pain to End, finding a better way in an aim to help others who may be suffering or give a better understanding to those who just don't get it. Shane's passion is creating real conversations which don't feel as challenging as they once were, allowing all humans to feel safer, build connections and find their own community to become healthier and happier versions of themselves. This is a tough but very important conversation. Shane, it's so lovely to have you here on the podcast. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. I mean, I'm excited. I've checked out a couple of your other podcasts and I love what the people are talking about on them. I'm excited to see where this goes.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. Well, let's get right into it. If there is one thing that you wish society would talk more about, what would it be?
The one thing that jumps out is just being more open about mental health and I guess the multifaceted side to it. And if we want to dig deeper into that, is the individual taking more onus on what they can do to move through the pain they're experiencing or the trauma they're experiencing, because that for me, and I think a lot of people I know, is really empowering. When you do the work yourself, you get to the end of it and you're like, oh, I did that. And that, again, can boost you going forward. So I think that's definitely, you know, one thing I think we need to talk about a little bit more.
Yeah, so taking responsibility for yourself. So almost like mental health is the individual's responsibility rather than it being someone else's. Is that kind of your message?
Yeah, it definitely is. And with that, before people go, oh, no, I can't do this, you're not doing it alone. There's surrounding yourself with support and then surrounding yourself with communities. And there is bigger things at play, but the main thing is stepping into the responsibility yourself and surrounding yourself with those people that can help you and do align with your values and will help you get to those next steps on your part of your journey. The people who have previously experienced those steps, and they're not higher, they're not better, they're just, you know, a couple of steps ahead. And that again is taking the responsibility for yourself to get other people around you.
Yeah, I like that. I'm a big advocate for, you know, your life is yours and no one kind of knows what you're going through, but also no one can truly help you through that stuff, as you're saying. But it's interesting. I mean, I think mental health is obviously a topic that more and more people are talking about. You've written this book, which has a really interesting title, I Didn't Want to Die. Talk to me more about that, like where the name of the book came from. Is pretty confronting, and obviously your experience to sort of lead you here as well, Shane.
Yeah, the book title came to me at the best time. I was driving down a freeway and it just popped into my head, and it's not something I'd even thought about really before, but when I thought I didn't want to die, I just wanted the pain to end, I guess it came back to wanting to end my own life at times throughout my life and having suicidal thoughts and these tendencies and people thinking that I actually wanted to die.
You didn't want to die. You just wanted the pain to end. That's the crux of it.
Yeah. And I think so many people I've spoken to or worked with in this space, that's what they come back to as well. Suicide wasn't what they wanted. There was just something going on for them, which can be completely different for each individual, that they just didn't know how to work through. And, you know, for me, it was this emotional pain, these thoughts and these feelings that I didn't know how to comprehend. I didn't know who to go to about. I didn't know how to manage myself.
Can you talk more about those? Like, if you're happy to describe them, because someone listening might go, oh yeah, I recognize that or I feel that.
So my suicide attempt was at 21 and my first, I guess, negative thought patterns were around that 12 to 13 mark. And they were that I was alone, I was crazy, that I was different, that my friends and family didn't want me to be around. I was a burden on them. I was a burden on society.
And they were your thoughts though. That was not the reality, right? You had a really good upbringing and everyone else to the rest of the world looked like you had a good upbringing.
Yeah, I'll be the first to say I did have a good upbringing, but something sort of just flicked in my mind and these thoughts and feelings, I guess, overtook my being in a way. I remember when I was 13, I'd get home from school and I'd lined in my bed for hours just wanting not to be here anymore and messaging a friend just saying, like, I just don't think I'm worth having around anymore. I'm more of a nuisance than anything. And I guess looking back now, I know that was, you know, just a thought pattern and it wasn't the truth. And I hope other people watching or listening to this understand that it's not the truth either. And your mind is this powerful beast that can play these wild tricks on you, but it's there to protect you. And I think it was trying to protect me and I didn't know how to manage that. And yeah, for years, that was my thought pattern. And I had a friend recently read the book and we've had conversations many a time about myself and how to manage. And he even said, I didn't realize how deep it was. Like, I didn't realize you thought about this daily. And more than that, I'd have nightmares about suicide. And in the nightmares, I'd had people laughing at me, like my friends and family. I can remember seeing their faces and going, you can't even do this right. And so it really took over. And that was daily, nightly. And I didn't know how to escape it. And I bottled it up. I locked it in. There was a padlock on the safe with all of this stuff just hidden away from the world. So that they didn't see it.
And so if you had your time again, like as a kid, you know, if that started at 11 and 12, what would you hope would be different for you then? Like, is it that your parents recognized that, that the schools did something different? What could be different to help you as this young boy going through that?
I think it's important to recognize for me that while it's challenging, I agree, is I probably need to speak up because no one can help me if they don't know. They can assume and they can guess, but even probably if I was asked the question, I probably would have pushed back. Not probably, I would have pushed back and I wouldn't have probably owned up to it because there was that fear of being judged. So I needed to open up about it, but we're getting better at this collectively and within schools and organisations and all that. But then there needs to be these really safe, supported spaces for people to go and step into these spaces. If people see a space they feel comfortable, they'll step into it. And we know that with sporting clubs and, you know, even as adults, you don't go into somewhere you don't feel safe and supported these days. And no matter what it looks like, if you feel like you belong there and it aligns with you, you'll step into it. A lot of the people I have worked with step into the wrong spaces, but it's because they're loved and they feel connected and they feel like they belong.
Can I press on that point though? So you said to me previously that you felt loved. You felt like you had a loving, caring, giving upbringing. So it's not like you were in a dysfunctional family and you're having these thoughts. So like, how do you reconcile with that now, you know, all these years on? Because I'm just trying to, you know, if people listening and they're like, well, I've got a kid that is going through hormonal changes and I just think it's hormones, or, you know, they don't talk to me much, but now listening to you, maybe there's something more sinister going on. Or is it the fact that now schools are talking about this so openly and other places, whether it is sporting environments that tend to talk about mental health, like it's, you know, when you're seeing celebrities that these young kids are sort of looking up to, talking about their challenges in this space. Do you think all that would have helped you as a young boy, you know, 20 years ago?
I definitely think it would have helped. Yeah, because it helps me now as an adult when I see this stuff. So does it mean I would have spoken up? You can't guarantee what you would have done, but I definitely think it would have helped in some capacity because I speak about it and people reach out to me. I speak to teenagers who experience these thoughts and they speak about it openly to me and they're like, am I allowed to speak about this? I'm like, of course. And they're like, oh, I've been told not to speak about this and or someone feels uncomfortable. And I'm like, well, if it's trapped in, it's got nowhere to go and you're going to bottle it up and you're going to build it up in your head and they let it out. And you can see the relief that comes over them by just expressing what's going on for them. There's a couple of ways of looking at it. And the first one, I think, is always to practice what you preach in terms of you can't tell kids what to do. They'll always just follow. My kids are really young, so I've got a lot to learn as they grow up. But a lot of the work I'm doing now is learning for myself and doing a lot more work on myself so I can be the most present parent for my kids and create an environment, not just for them, but for their friends and to potentially come to me if they have or need anything. And will I get it right? I don't know, but I'm going to do everything I can to get there. And that's not by just telling them that I'm here there for them. It's actually having conversations with my wife or my friends and family, which are not as deep as what we're probably going on this podcast, but to show them that we're a safe person to come to if you ever experience something like this. And it's something that I've been a personal trainer in the past, and you quite often see parents come in and they want their kids to look after themselves. And it's like, well, what are you doing? Like, because they're watching you. I do it with my phone. Like, my kids are nearly 3 and 14 months, and I have my phone and I can see that that affects them. Like, they act out and then they want to watch TV or watch the iPad or play with the phone. So instantly, like, I can't tell them. And my wife and I just recently went through this. We can't tell our son he can't watch Paw Patrol. We need to put our phones away, put our laptops away, and we need to stop watching TV. And we need to be with them. And he's asked for the TV maybe 3 times in a week because he's not around it. And when we're not eating junk food, when we're eating healthy, he eats what we eat. And if this is a 2.5-year-old, I can only imagine what that impact's going to have as he grows up. But then obviously schools and other people become influencers, and that's where it's on us to make sure we surround ourselves with people who appreciate this type of upbringing, because I'm not saying it's the right or wrong way to go about it either. For us, it's about surrounding ourselves with good role models for our kids as well, because kids get to a point where they don't want to talk to their parents and they'll go to other people anyway, and that's part of being a human as well.
So the way you're describing that there leads beautifully into the point you're saying, Shane, around, you know, taking control of your own feelings and your own health and well-being, which is a message that I'm constantly giving people. And I think if, you know, adults are listening, and to your point, you know, now as a man, you are dealing and supporting people and spreading that message out to a lot of older people that are coming to you and talking about their own mental health and their own kind of feelings and stuff. So if you had to give messages to people around how to navigate this space, if they have, you know, they're having bad feelings and they're, you know, not being able to deal with the way they feel about themselves or the world and it's overwhelming, how would you suggest that they tackle that?
It's important for the individual to recognize that their individual path might be completely different to others. And sometimes that can be really challenging because there's no like one clear path, and that's kind of what you want to get out of those unpleasant thought patterns and unpleasant feelings. But it's really stepping into your own skin and sort of finding a fight within yourself, like not a negative fight, but like really brave and inspired, I'm gonna work through this kind of mentality. And then it's putting your hand up and asking and surrounding yourself with who might be able to help you and asking the questions. You know, you might have someone that might have been through something similar. What did you do to get through that? Because like a 15-year-old girl might want to come to me, but a 27-year-old male might be like, I'm experiencing this, so what did you do? And we might have some alignment there. It doesn't mean I can't help that younger female, but they might relate to someone else a little bit more.
And I think also I just find with different things that I'm going through in life that there are different people. It's almost like, you know, you're an athlete and you have, like you think about Ash Barty, you know, someone at the top of their game and they have a team of people. You know, it's not just one coach like back in the day, you know, someone like Bjorn Borg or whatever. I don't think about those older tennis players that they would have had just the one coach. You know, these days there is a team of people around them to support them. And so I kind of liken that my health like that as well. You know, I have a person that helps me with, you know, my muscle soreness. I have a person that helps me with my back rehab. I have a person that helps me with positive thinking or, you know, whatever. And I feel that's a message for people in the sense that you might talk to a friend or a family member and they kind of brush you off. Don't let that be the end of it. Like they just might not be the person you need to talk to. And sometimes it's easier to talk to someone that doesn't know you and doesn't understand you. And they might give you a really interesting, different angle of how to navigate this, huh?
I love that point. And it made me sort of laugh in a way because when you get a friend and family member, they're biased towards you as well. So they're going to try and want to see the best in you. Whereas if you go to the professional, they're probably going to give you like a bit more of a harder approach. Without being judgmental, they'll do it with care. But if a family member did that, you will probably take that personally and you'll be like, oh my God, I can't believe you think about me like that. Whereas a professional, you're like, oh yeah, you can recognize what they're saying is probably more legit and not saying that your friend or family isn't. And for me, like I go to friends and family a lot more now because I don't take it personally and they also give it to me a lot straighter because they're not fearful of the way I react. And that can be part of it as well. So I have like a really good, I think, balance for me now where I've got professionals that I don't see as regular, but I go to friends and family more and that will look different for everyone because a lot of me going to professionals is just to further my knowledge in this space as well. It's not always just about me. Sometimes it is, sometimes it's all about me and making sure that I'm learning and being a better human essentially because being a better human is being a better parent and being a better friend and being a better person to strangers, really. So I do that, but having that collective team is so important and not just of people, but of, you know, those things in the tool that you can go to any day, any time that help you. And people use time and money as probably two of the biggest barriers. These things that are free that you can do that can help you. You can go for a walk, you can go for a run, you can listen to a podcast, you can read free books. There's lots you can do.
Yeah, well, I was going to touch on that because a beautiful segue is about journaling. And so sometimes people can't talk about stuff with others, but do you recommend for people to write? You have a journal as well as part of your kind of program and stuff, but what's your view on writing this down and getting it out of your head?
Well, it needs to come out some way. And I think for me, a big thing was I found it really hard to speak when my head and my mind was just completely out of control. So writing it down was the only way I could get it out. And further to that, I write letters to people as well because I can't verbally direct it to them because it's too hard. I don't think I'll get the words out.
Letters to people that have harmed you or that you want them to know stuff about you or that have pissed you off or all of the above?
probably all of the above. The ones where I'm trying to express how I'm feeling or thoughts which might be helpful to someone else sort of tends to be to my wife sometimes because sometimes these conversations are really hard. You feel like you're letting the other person down. But I guess the thoughts of and feelings towards other people which might be more negative, I write them out and usually I look at it and I'm like, that's not the truth. And I'm able to throw that in the bin and move on. And that's my way of letting go. I burn letters in a safe environment, controlled environment. And sometimes I journal and flick the page and I'd never read it again because it's just out. And some people now use like their notes in their phone or their mind can race so much that they do need to verbalize it, but not to someone. So they'll do audio notes or there's just so many different ways to do it.
Great idea. I would recommend for everyone to try all of the above, you know, like talk to someone, write notes, you know, type it. There's something for me around that cognitive connection between writing, you know, getting something from my brain into through a pen onto paper. And like you say, sometimes I can't even read my writing back, but it's like getting it out, like releasing that to the world almost rather than it sitting because I'm such a thinker, like I mull things around and I need to get them out. And it becomes so all consuming, I guess, and overwhelming. And that then leads to what you're talking about here is this feeling of of stuff that then, you know, when you do break it down or you release it or you write it down or talk to someone, you're like, wow, that's not true. But I've been thinking that for weeks. Like, what the hell? Like,
yeah, that's the beauty of it. Like getting something out, you're like, I was thinking that. If someone else had said that, I'd be like, that's not true, man. And so you're like, oh, like that doesn't matter. That's not relevant. And it almost just relaxes you. It lets you go. And I guess to correlate it to meditation, like personally, I don't meditate a lot because my mind thinks a lot more. Whereas if I journal, that's my meditative space. It doesn't mean I don't do meditation or breath work or anything. But for me, journaling is more helpful. It allows me to sort of go through those thoughts and feelings a lot more productively than what meditation does. And meditation sort of can send me on a spiral sometimes. Sometimes it's amazing, but sometimes it's like, I just need to write this stuff out and express it in this different way. And that's, I think, the beautiful thing on what you said, try it all, because you'll find things that do and don't work for you and some will work for others. And I've tried things and I'm like, that doesn't work for me, but I actually think it might work for someone else because they're different. So you can share those experiences with people and help other people along the journey of your own self-discovery as well.
With some of the work you do, you talk about there being core emotions and there's a reference to 6 core emotions. Can you talk me through what those are?
I'll give a shout out to Mindfulize. I've been across what they do for a long time and I was a big believer in it because, and it's something I probably didn't even touch on before when we had a chat, was like I had nightmares during my primary school days as well. And I don't know how that correlates, but I entered high school not understanding any emotions or how to process them or whatnot. So what they do is they work with kids in primary school to start to understand a little bit more. And it gets expanded as you get older and as you start to understand this more. But they work with kids around disgust, surprise, joy. You know, you've tested me here off the top of my head. I'm still learning it. And I'll touch on that because I'm 35 and I'm still learning this stuff. And I think that's why it's so important for these kids and teenagers to learn it, because you get to the real world, that's when it can become problematic.
But I think also the message is it's not too late either. You know, for us adults to, you know, have never done this work as a kid, beautiful that we're catching kids earlier and that they are understanding this, but also for, you know, anyone listening that, you know, we've all got challenges, we've got shit going on. I mean, it might be just one point in time in your life, but no one has a rosy life forever and ever, the whole, you know, hopefully 80, 100 years that they live. So there are times in our lives that we all have challenges. And again, I think that's a really clear message that everyone has shit going on at some point. And that's okay. And it's all right to share it. It's, you know, we don't always have to have this perfect Insta, you know, projection of a perfect life all the time, because it's bullshit. Yeah. So talk to me. So what are the 6 core emotions that, you know, we're identifying for us to be aware of?
So sadness, joy, anger, fear, surprise, and disgust are the 6 that they work with. And they've done a lot of work in this space and a lot of research and stuff like that, which I'm excited to tap into, because I think this is the stuff like I'm trying to instill in my kids at their age now. Like when my son has a tantrum, like, well, not in the tantrum, but after, we're like, did you feel sadness? Were you angry? And he's like, yes. And now he talks about when he's scared. Like he's like, mummy scared me. And, you know, these type of things.
Being able to verbalize it, that's fascinating. Yeah.
And they can verbalize it. And to be able to have these conversations with their peers or with adults is really helpful. And I guess to touch on your point about it's never too late to learn. Recently, I had a lady come to me at an event and she has a family member who's in their teens, and she shared with me that they are going through some really challenging times at the moment, and the grandmother didn't know how to understand all of this. So she wants to learn more now because it's a big factor in her life at the moment. And it goes back to the fact you never know what's in front of you, or you never know what's to come. And she put her hand up and she's like, I don't know enough about this. And she hasn't needed to know any more about it, but now she does. So she's like, oh, I need to learn about it. And that's, I think the older you get, and if you ask questions, then that shows bravery and courage in itself, because it's easy to ask questions when you're a kid. And in a way, as you get older, you feel like, oh no, I should know everything. Like I'm educated. I should know this. where it's like, you don't know what you don't know. And it's okay to put your hand up and say, I need help, or I need guidance, or I need education on any topic.
Yeah. And something I always try, you know, whether it's with mates and talking about something, or in the studio where I'm learning new stuff with my pottery, or in the boardroom, I try and reframe it for myself about almost taking a playful approach and going, like, if this was brand new and I didn't know, like, how would I understand this more? And so, you know, I sort of ask the question, like, how can you help me understand this a little bit more? And then I'll sort of launch into my question. And I just takes the pressure off you feeling like you're dumb, or, you know, that, oh God, I should know this or whatever. And often what I find is when I ask the so-called dumb question about whatever topic, is someone else would then admit to me and go, yeah, I had no idea either. But, they weren't brave enough to speak out. So then it gives me more and more encouragement, I guess, in those environments to say, oh God, that isn't a dumb question, and that I should speak out more, because often other people are probably feeling the same. And so just to finish up then this beautiful conversation, if someone listening and you want to, you know, say one thing to them about, you know, mental health and, you know, really taking responsibility for your own mental health, what would you like to say today in the point of time with everything you've gone through and everything you've learned to date and the stuff that you're still learning? What last message would you like to share, Shane?
I think never give up. We've touched on it today, is finding different things that work for you can take time, but if you're still here, there's a purpose. Like, there genuinely is a purpose, but it's finding within yourself where that lies, and it's not always a straight line. It's just not. And recently I was diagnosed with heart disease, which we spoke about prior, and it meant that I needed to alter the course of where I was going, and that happens, and it happens in different ways for different people. But the message for me right along, and for anyone, is don't give up, because you will find it. You'll find the people that are going to, you know, stand by you. Like, as you walk through those doors to the next phase of your life, there's going to be an army behind you. But that comes with, you know, speaking out and asking questions and getting that guidance and help along the way. And that's a big part. If people are asking questions, it's a clear sign they don't want to give up. They want to work through this. So those two probably work hand in hand. And I've touched on it throughout, but I still do that as well, and I still live by those mottos myself, because you never know what challenge is around the corner, unfortunately. But fortunately as well, you probably wouldn't want to know everything that's going to happen in the rest of your life, because some of it's probably not great, but
scare the crap out of you.
Yeah. So it's just never giving up, no matter what sort of comes, because there's still a purpose and there's still other people around that want you there, despite not feeling like that. In the moment or in the time.
Wonderful. Thanks, Shane, for being here. It's been fabulous to meet you today and to chat through this. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Well, there you have it. Wasn't that an incredible conversation? I hope you enjoyed it as much as I've enjoyed bringing it to you. If you did like it, can I ask a small favour? Please rate and review on your listening platform for me. I know everyone asks this, but it seriously makes a difference to help get these conversations out in the world, and makes all the hard work and effort I put into this for you all the more worthwhile. And until next time, if you have one question you'd like to ask me, hit me up on my socials or jump on my website, michellejcox.com.